Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It's the start of Sedin Week. A week that when I was a child, never seemed possible. An entire city, an entire province, an entire fan base saluting a pair of redheads.
What?
Fantastic stuff.
Why didn't it seem possible?
There was Kick a Ginger Day, Bick. Need I go on?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, let's move on from that. I'm just happy to see these guys saluted this week. It's going to be a fun week. However, this week will have a bitter taste if the hockey team that is playing for record right now doesn't get its act together in a hurry, and the results diminish what should be a great celebration.
Yeah. It's funny, too, because, you know, we talked about last week. It's like, how do you stay focused in the moment and prepare for what's going to be an emotional week? And they started out so hot in that game versus Calgary. And then, you know, I don't want to say the focus went. It's just the trends that we've seen recently came to roost.
Well, it's funny because the team that came in here and beat them had a very similar outing to the Canucks the game before. The Flames, hosting the Predators, scored a goal 32 seconds into that game. Sam Bennett opened the scoring, and hey, they finally got the first goal, and everything's all right. And they were up 2-0 in that game. Canucks weren't up 2-0, but what did the Canucks do? Canucks got a goal 33 seconds in. They got a little boost of energy with JT Miller and Matthew Tkachuk going toe-to-toe. Everything felt like it was going to go exactly according to plan. And then the Canucks failed to do what the Flames failed to do against the Predators. They failed to take care of the details. Winning puck battles, zone entry, zone exit. All of those little things that Travis Green talked about after the game, and he didn't really go after his team. In fact, Jamie, do we have the Travis Green clip there? From Sunday, from Saturday night. This is from Saturday night. He didn't go after his team entirely, Bick, but here's what Travis Green had to say about that loss on Saturday as he viewed it.
You know, when you're playing games like this, it's those little details that matter. It's the little puck battles over the course of 60 minutes that add up. And I just thought we looked like the younger team a little bit tonight.
Just looked like the younger team a little bit. And that's not him throwing shade. That's we need to learn exactly what is necessary in games like this because there's going to be a lot more of them.
Yeah, I said this before. Goals are kind of the anomaly of, you know, the events in a game, right? And so how do you build everything towards that? It's a bunch of exactly what you're talking about, Scott. Little things. Are you able to protect the line? Are you able to... You know, stick positioning is something we don't really think about. But you look at that first Tanner Pearson goal, like Johnny Gaudreau gets his stick positioning all wrong, creates this lane, this passing lane for Hughes to take advantage of, and gets that puck to Tanner Pearson. Those are constant little things. Adam Gaudette rushing back to, you know, does a good job of, you know, diagnosing the play and picking up his man. But you've got to check your speed when you get into that low slot, and he winds up, you know, kind of sliding right into Jacob Markstrom. It's you can't do that. You did a good job to get back, but that's a minor thing that results into a bigger deal.
It certainly does, and it's funny how fast all of this stuff happens, not just within the course of the game like you described, in the course of a week.
Yeah.
So last Sunday, I'm talking 8 days ago, there are the Canucks earning a point against the Carolina Hurricanes with Elias Pettersson getting his second of the game, forcing a shootout, doesn't go their way, but hey, they've started this road trip 2-0-1, back-to-back days, good hockey team here in Carolina, and they get a point out of that. Lose the next game in Boston, and not many teams win in Boston. They're a better team. That's a Stanley Cup contender. Okay. Minnesota, you know, they got down early, but like the collective pushback, like the collective effort, sometimes you're just not going to find a way out of a 3-0 hole. All of a sudden, they lose Saturday, and oh, wow, they've lost four in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That happened quickly. That escalated quickly.
We did talk about it. It was like, okay, they've banked the 5 points they needed on this trip. And is that enough for you? Do you feel content on what it is? And look, there is a reality that it's definitely enough on that trip. But the journey, I don't necessarily agree that the journey does matter, but people will frame it as that. As you can't let things fester. And because they went on a 3-game losing streak at the end of the road trip, suddenly it doesn't feel like a job completed, even though they completed the job.
Here's the great news. They built so much equity with 14 wins in 20 games that even by virtue of losing four in a row, they're still in first place. Now, it's not in their control completely. Edmonton has a game in hand, but there's a lot of time left in the season. Mm-hmm. They're going to play divisional games. They're going to play against these other Pac-5 teams, so there's time to be made up. Point is that now you have to dig your heels in all of a sudden, and they're having to dig their heels in, I think, quicker than we would have anticipated.
Because of the gap that they previously held?
Yes.
Sure, but, okay, here's the thing is, and I know you said this, of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right?
Absolutely.
And this Pacific Division is going to fluctuate wildly. Do we expect Vegas, okay, it's kind of coming on here recently. That's the one we feel like will persist. Do we expect Edmonton to suddenly just hit a new level? Do we expect Calgary to hit a new level, Arizona? I just feel like while they're hot in the short term, they're going to be cold right after that.
Well, here's the thing. With the Vancouver Canucks, you can make a case as to why this is going to turn around, and we've got evidence for that. Ian McIntyre is set to join us here momentarily. But with all of those other teams, you can make a case as well. Edmonton, I don't believe, has lost three in a row since mid-December. They snuffed out that losing streak by coming back and beating Nashville on Saturday. Calgary, yeah, they've had their troubles, but they're swinging through California, and with teams that on paper they should grab points from, all of a sudden their week might look pretty good all of a sudden. Arizona looks like they're going to get Darcy Kemper and Oliver Ekman-Larsson back tonight. They have been scuffling big time, but you add those two guys to their lineup, maybe things turn around. You're right. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's what it's going to be like the rest of the way, which is where we introduce Ian McIntyre to this equation, Sportsnet's triple threat. He is not uncomfortable in joining us. At least I don't think you are. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm not uncomfortable at the moment, but just generally in life, aren't we all uncomfortable?
Well, at some point.
Yeah.
Ill-fitting clothes, yeah. I think.
Well, yeah. I don't know if you've seen me lately, Scotty. I'm not the easiest guy to fit off the rack, but I like that. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because I think that is how it is. I remember Tyler Myers, I think it was at the end of the 7-game winning streak, before the team went and had that disaster in Florida, a disastrous week, 2 games there that they were awful. And, the Canucks, seven wins in a row, and there were flaws, but, man, they were piling up points and pulling away from, starting to pull away from the cut line. And he said, it's going to go down to the last week. And I thought, that doesn't sound very optimistic. But he's been around, and he knows, and it's been a bunch race pretty much all season, and it's going to be a bunch finish. And the reason they're going to stay in a bunch is because there's no dominant teams. They all have good, strong aspects, things you like. They all have flaws. And, Vegas, when you look at them, they're the least flawed, and yet they're scuffling along with everyone else, which maybe means internally they're the most flawed. There's something not right there. I think it is going to go down to the last week. I think the Canucks, I hope that for their sake, this current losing streak doesn't continue, but I think they're going to continue from now until April to have these peaks and valleys. And it's partly a young team. It's partly the division that they're in. And it's partly that they're not nearly a finished product yet. They can, as an organization, as a team, they can still be a lot better in years to come, but it's a lot of fun right now. I have to say, it's fun to actually see a real playoff race again.
Brock Besser won't be a part of it tonight or Wednesday at the very least. Just an odd injury. Is it more concerning for the individual here or for the team?
Well, I think an injury is always concerning to an individual because it's their livelihood. But obviously this has long-term ramifications for the team if he's out an extended period of time. And, you know, touch wood, it doesn't appear to be the case, but we'll see what the update is. It's easy for the Canucks to say, by the way. It's the perfect week to say you're going to miss two games and then he'll be reevaluated because they only play two games this week. So they've got time to figure out what the injury is and what the ramifications may be. I know that Brock has not been playing especially well lately. I also know he's gone through a lot in his personal life with his dad's illness and near death last summer. There's a lot going on there, and he's a very young player still, trying to figure things out. But who else on the team, other than, you know, Pettersson and Miller, who else on the team who doesn't play on his line, could you say would have a reasonable chance to score 10 more goals this year? And I'm not saying that Brock would, because he hasn't got any in 11 games. But he does have that potential to score and go low, and they would miss that. Even if Besser is not scoring now, they would miss that potential, that opportunity to get offense from him in a hurry down the stretch. They don't have anybody else to score. And I'm curious to see Justin Bailey tonight, because he is kind of a two-way guy. He's not simply a grinder, say, like Zach MacEwen is, and maybe he's got an offensive side at this level. But generally, when your scorers go out at the NHL level, you don't have scorers to replace him, and you're going to miss him. And if Besser's out a while, the Canucks are going to miss him.
You know, we say this a lot when a backup goalie goes in. It's like, oh, you've got to start taking care of all the smaller details of the game, and that what leads to a win. Now you're talking about an elite goal scorer going out. You know, this is going to be by committee to some degree, and we just saw on Saturday, like, all those little details that they're supposed to have covered kind of fell by the wayside. How do they get back to that?
Well, this is one of the problems, is the details have gone by the wayside at various points. And the last few games, you know, they've had a lot of the flaws that they had before the awakening in Florida. You know, they're giving up, they're not taking care of the puck. They're giving up too much around their own net. They're not protecting in the front of their net well enough. And so there's, you know, no matter who's in the lineup, the team has gotten a little bit ragged here. I do think they're able to clean that up. But you can't go, if they're going to make the playoffs, they can't continue to give up, you know, 36 to 40 shots a game. And they can't continue to have scoring chances against in the 20s and even in the high teens. So they do have a lot that they have to kind of refine here. But again, you know, going back to what I said, they're not unlike the teams that they're competing with. You know, everybody's got their issues that they're trying to find out. Everybody, and I mean everybody, is still looking for consistency. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the mosh pit for the playoff spots in the Pacific. So I think the Canucks can work these things out. I think they can, you know, they one of the greatest traits and most surprising ones they've had this year is their depth in scoring. When, you know, we all wondered at the start of the year, well, where will the goals come from if not from Besser, Horvat, Pettersson? Well, they've got lots of guys who have contributed. They need to continue to get everybody contributing, especially if Besser is out. But I think it's more about what they're doing on their own half of the ice and how well they're managing the puck. I think that's as important as any issue right now.
We see the obvious issues on the ice, right? And I was saying on a post game on Saturday that, you know, to get out of this, to start correcting all those details, not that there's pressure on him, but this is Travis Green's time to shine, right? This is how you pull them out of this mini rut that they're in. Is it fair to say that, you know, if they bounce back tonight and they have a big week here, a strong reflection on him?
Well, I think the season is a reflection on the coach. I think it's too easy to say and to boil it down to a really simplistic example. It's too easy to say when the Canuck power play is 4 for 44 that Newell Brown's doing a terrible job, just as it's too easy to say if it goes, you know, 12 for 30, boy, Newell Brown's a genius. You know, it in the end, you're going to get judged on the whole canvas, not just one corner of the picture. And in everybody's picture, there are smears. You know, there are things that don't look as good as the coach would like them to. I don't really know where I'm going with this on Travis Green, other than I just don't really believe that, you know, the next couple of weeks, regardless of whether they win or lose all their games, is going to be a defining moment for the coach. I think his defining moment is going to be whatever the point total is at the end of this season. How many of the players that he coached have had what we would consider good years on an individual basis? And, you know, are the young players better at the end of the season than they were at the start? That's how Travis Green is going to be judged. But certainly right now, when things aren't going well, players are looking for guidance and leadership from their coach. I always remember that was something that Mark Crawford said, is, you know, that it's when things are toughest for the team that the players are most open to what the coach might have to say. So it's an important time, but, you know, from now to the end of the season, it's an important time.
I think you should ask Travis Green if you can sketch his portrait based on that metaphor you're setting up.
I was not very good in art. You know, my artistic skills peaked about the same time as my athletic skills, which was grade 2. I got 5 ribbons on sports day. That was pretty much the peak of my athletic prowess. And art was the same way. I could do an awesome potato stamp for you if you like.
What was your event? Was it like the egg and the spoon kind of thing?
I was, you know, just an all-around good athlete.
That's what they usually say.
I could run. I was not built naturally with a heavy frame, and because I played sports and had a pretty good ticker, I could run distance.
We'll get to the Sedins in a second, who can run distance. You know that. I want to ask you, because you've covered this team for a very long time, do you see any similarities between this current crop of Canucks trying to find its way into the playoffs and the learning curve it has to go through here over the next 20 or so games to get there, and the Marcus Naslund-led team that eventually broke the playoff drought at the start of this century, even though Naslund had broken his leg with 10 games to go? Do you see any similarities between those?
I actually do. I think there's a lot of parallels there. And I'm thinking of the Canucks teams when Crawford took over from Mike Keenan and Burke was the GM. And it just seemed like they were so hopelessly uncompetitive. But, you know, they worked away at it, and 99, 2000, they were close. You know, they failed to make the playoffs, but they competed, and they looked like they might be a playoff team. The next year, they got in. And I see a lot of similarities with what this team has been through, where not that long ago, they looked hopelessly out of it. And you wondered whether they would ever get this turned around. Now you can see that they are, and that maybe this is going to be the season, and you have a pretty good feeling like if it's not this year, then for sure it would be next year, although there are no for sures in the NHL. But the key difference is the players on this team who are driving the offense, they're just so young. You know, Marcus Naslund, I'd have to go back and look. I think in 01 he was probably 26 years old, 25 years old. And Todd Bertuzzi was young. Matthias Olin was in his prime as a defenseman. That's different than guys who are in their first and second year of the league, like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, is even the third year in the league, like Brock Besser is. So there are some similarities. This is a team that we can see is learning how to win, and sometimes it's not as quickly as we would like, but there's so much talent there, and it still still young and somewhat raw. So that's the challenge that Travis Green has, is that he's just got so many of these players who are still, in relative terms, at the formative stage of their NHL careers. They're still trying to figure out what kind of player they're going to be.
You have a lot of highlights on your career resume. Where does being able to cover the Sedins for the entirety of their career rank?
Oh, they were just and are wonderful guys and wonderful players. They're two of the best. They're the two best players the franchise has had. And I know that's always a tricky argument. Like, what exactly is the criteria? But, they 1,000 games, 1,000 points, entire careers here, and were the focal point of a team that was, without argument, the best collection of players they've had in franchise history. It was a golden era. So they're the best players, in my opinion, that the Canucks have had. But they're also just such incredible people. Vancouver really has been lucky over the years that so many of the best players in this franchise have also been such good and honorable people, and they've been a treat to cover. I was saying today to a couple of guys, seeing how the Sedins were scrummed down at Rogers Arena by the media this morning, I remember their very first skate with the Vancouver Canucks at training camp in Stockholm in 2000. It took them about a half hour to make it from the arena door to the dressing room door because there was that much media waiting for them, and they stopped and gave everybody time. They answered every question. And then my most strongest memory of the 2011 final is them doing the same thing after game 6 in Boston. That the team was awful, looked like, the series had swung, which of course it had. And while a lot of players were hard to find, these guys stood in their socks and sweats in the dressing room for half an hour while wave after wave of reporters came by to essentially carve them up. And they just felt like they needed to be accountable and responsible, and they played their whole careers that way. I can't imagine how good it would have been to play on the team with them as a young player and see how they handled themselves and see what leadership is all about.
Very well said, as per usual. Should be a fun week, Ian. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here, and look forward to hearing you on the postgame tonight as well.
Well, I always look forward to that. So generally the highlight of my day, but this was pretty close.
Just pretty close. Well, we'll do better next time. We'll be accountable like the Sedins. We'll be better next time, Ian.
All right. Well, you always strive to be better. That's what makes you such a great pro.
Thanks, buddy.
See ya.
That's Ian McIntyre. Sportsnet's triple threat. He's so right about the Sedins. And I don't know what the highest road is around here, but it should be named Sedin Way or Sedin Street, because they always took it. They always did. There was always an easier way out. And they always took the high road. There were times they could have sniped back. There were times that they were asked, quote-unquote, dumb questions or leading questions or things that people were trying to trigger from them. And what did they do? They said the right thing. Even if they might not have wanted to, they said and did the right thing. And, Bick, I'm not sure how you feel about them. They are – forget about the hockey aspect –
no,
those are the type of people I want living in my city, man.
I was just going to say that.
Those are the kind of people I want as my neighbors. That's what I want.
They are role models, but they are role models for off the ice. And hockey was just the vehicle to show everyone, hey, this is a standard you could live up to. And, that high road is exactly what you're talking about. It's when you get agitated and when someone's trying to agitate you, there are ways to deal with it that go beyond just, what's the term we've been talking about? Pushback and, having that element to your game. And that's the on-ice component. But just in general, like, if I get frustrated in my personal life, do I snap at times? Yeah, of course I do. But, there, that's an example at times to it's there's a ways to treat others in a certain way that goes beyond just your own selfish desires.
Though the Canucks have never won the Cup and gotten the prize everybody in this market has wanted, they've had great leaders. Mm-hmm. And there was a leadership bar that had been established, and they raised it. And there was a give back to your community element that had been established, and they raised it. And that is why they are, without question, the greatest Canucks of all time. And while I know that in Vancouver or any other Canadian market, there's always going to be a faction that says, Canadian captain, that old school template, that's what we want. Mm-hmm. For me personally, just looking at what this city is and the diversity of it, the fact that you have strong leaders from an international community who embrace this city and this country, quite frankly, as their own and lead by example, that to me is so honorable. And that to me is something everyone should want to achieve, to act like that, to be above the noise when it presents itself.
Act like that? Models
act like
that.
Team like that.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's, you know, it's great what you say, too, just that, you know, there's an established history of all the things you're talking about, the community work, right? And, like, that's what progress is. Trevor Linden set a bar for it and raised the bar, obviously, right? And then
Marcus Naslund took that torch.
Yeah, and he takes it, you know, another step. And then Daniel Henrik Sedin come in and take it another step. And look at all the initiatives the Canucks are involved in now, right? Canucks Autism Network, Canucks for Kids. All these things all stem from a select group of players who are willing to invest that time. And, it you know, Friday night is going to be Dice and Ice, right? Supporting the Canucks for Kid Foundation. And it's events like this that prosper because players care. And these guys cared. And it's, you know, I'm not going to put it on them now, but, like, what do we think Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and these types of players are going to usher in? They see the level that you have to get to push all these things that have been established already, thanks to Daniel and Henrik Sedin, thanks to Trevor Linden and everyone.
There's something that it means to be a National Hockey League player, and there's something different that it means to be a Canuck. And they have established that now. That is the standard. And that's what you try to live up to. It's going to be a fun week. Want your comments? Hit us up. You've got the Subway text message inbox, 650-650. We will start to talk about what happened on the weekend, what needs to happen this week. And Daniel and Henrik both spoke here at Rogers Arena. You'll hear some of that next on Canucks Central, on the home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
They're world-class people. I mean, they came to the rink every single day to work. They, you know, they're leaders on and off the ice in the community, around the rink. For a young guy seeing that, what they did for this organization, you just want to do half of what they did, and I'd be happy. So, you know, they meant a lot to me in my first 4 years.
It's the guy who got the captaincy from Henrik Sedin. That would be Bo Horvat trying to get his team back on track tonight. Four-game losing streak. It's happened rather quickly to the Vancouver Canucks, who remain in first place in the Pacific Division. Going to try to fend off the Nashville Predators, who are coming off a tough loss of their own on the weekend. Scott Rento, Pick Nazar. This is Canucks Central live from Rogers Arena, the site of Preds Canucks Legends Night. Marcus Naslund joined us earlier. Should be a fun night, Bick. Wednesday is the ultimate night, obviously. That's mm-hmm. when 22 and 33 go to the rafters. They'll be at the rink, of course. We'll be at the rink. Should mention, you need to be at the rink at 6 o'clock if you are coming to that game.
I think doors open at 4:30.
Yeah, 4:30, you want to get your pregame vibe going. You can be down here at 4:30, but make sure you're in your seats by 6 o'clock if you want to see these two legendary Canucks and the greatest Canucks of all time celebrated the way they deserve to be. We'll talk more about the Sedins as this goes on. What is the most troubling aspect of what you saw on Saturday, good sir?
Defensive zone coverage. Like, you know, we talk a lot about identity. Another word for that is also, like, foundation, right? And the foundation of this team, like, I'm not sure what it is. And if you want to be an offensive team, because I think that's where it's going to trend at some point in the lifespan of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And Elias Pettersson knows this. It's got to filter to the rest of the team. But if you want to score, you kind of need the puck. And if you need to be better in your D zone, you can't play like Toronto to some degree and say, hey, the 55% we have the puck, boy, we're going to look great. And the 45%, we don't know how we're going to get it back. That was, you've got to start solving that problem, and I think everything filters from there.
Has Markstrom and Demko, to a lesser extent, their great goaltending, has it reinforced bad habits for some of the players? That they've been able to get away with mistakes in their own zone?
Potentially.
And this isn't to say that this guy was the worst guy costing the game, but I will highlight one play from Saturday. Jake Virtanen skated back to nowhere and stood there and screened Markstrom on that play. Now, he doesn't generally screen Markstrom on that play, but he skated back to no man's land, chose to take nobody, and literally stood there. And I'm not saying he does that all the time, but most games, you get away with that. You're not screening the goalie, Markstrom stops that puck, and it's no big deal. I'm sure the coaches notice. I'm sure the coaches say something. But you and I know this. You can say all you want, but when you keep winning and when there are no real consequences, it doesn't have the same effect. I've got children. I know this. Listen, you can threaten a timeout or whatever it is unless you're willing to follow through, unless there's something that actually happens in one ear, out the other after a while.
Now, there's no disciplinary
consequences.
This is just consequences of your actions lead to goals, lead to losses in that scenario, right?
Yes, and what that will end up being in terms of disciplinary consequences is if you keep doing this and they keep costing us, you're not going to play very much. And this isn't about Jake Virtanen. This is about anybody. It's about the Canucks in general. I'm not panicking. The market shouldn't panic right now, but this is a time when there's a little wobble that you want to see the ship get steadied and righted right away.
Yeah, and look, that's an interesting play, too, because another small detail we'll bring up is that play on the 3-2 goal, Dubé. It's like Quinn Hughes, Jake Virtanen have a chance to get the puck out. It's a 2v2 war battle. It's not as if they were outmanned in that spot. You got to get that puck out, and it's a detail like that, and it just allows everyone to get their defense set up. And what happens to that play? It just gets thrown to the corner. Dubé makes a nice play in a far tougher situation for Tyler Myers. Like, yeah, he should be able to cover that up, but it's a tougher situation. There's more space to work with for Dubé, and he turns it into a goal. If the defensive side of it gets picked up, and that play you're talking about, like, that's playing fast. If Jake takes the right spot, okay, maybe that pass isn't available for Ryan, and so you can't drop it back. You start doing those things, it adds to turnovers, and now you get the puck back. Now you can play in transition, and the Canucks thrive in transition. They have the players that can pull it off. Bo Horvat was trying to do it his best Saturday night. He was all over the ice carrying the puck, and showing some high level skill as well. That's it. To me, it's got to come from defense first.
Yeah, it has to start there, and it has to be more opportunistic with the power play. We keep going back to it, but that can be the difference in a game like the one we saw on Saturday night. Take advantage of those opportunities. They got a couple of nice bounces early. Tanner Pearson scores 33 seconds in. Adam Gaudette gets the bounce that, man, could have turned that game, quite frankly. And give credit to the opposition. That's a team that's had a wobble of its own lately, was able to snuff out a losing streak, and did it through a blue-collar effort. It's not as though the Flames completely outskilled the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday night. Nope. Just kept their nose to the grindstone. And it's something they hadn't done for the week leading up, but they were able to do it on that night. And I thought Travis Green's comment afterwards a pertinent one. We just looked like we were a little bit like the younger team.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't taking shots. It was more of, we need to learn from this. And this team is still growing. And as much success as we've had lately, games are getting harder. And this is a game that proves to you details matter.
When you heard the younger comment, what's interesting too is like, Pettersson's and Quinn Hughes have reached a certain level of standing across the league, right? But are they fully consistent to that level, right? Because, again, like the level raised up, and so now your play has to raise up too. And they're doing great for where they are at their age. But if you want to stay in that echelon of what you're talking about, like, you've got to be consistently great too.
Pettersson carved his performance on Saturday. He did, and it speaks to his desire to be great. It speaks to his accountability. It speaks to a lot of things, and it does show a lot of maturity. You know, you heard Henrik Sedin talking about it when we played that clip last hour on this station. He's so mature for his age. And sometimes that fuel that he has and that burning desire to be great, it's manifested itself in a couple of interesting ways in the media. And again, something he's tried to correct over the course of this year, the way he's perceived. But hey, there's a guy who held himself accountable. I will be surprised if Elias Pettersson does not play an extremely strong game tonight. I'll be very surprised.
He's going to be one of those things I look at as far as, you know, how is he physically coming off of the abuse that he took on Saturday and obviously the injury versus Boston. Because, you know, with Brock Besser out, I was mentioning scoring by committee earlier, but it's more like do the duties by committee and your stars kind of have to propel you the rest of the way. Everyone's got to chip in a little bit to clean up the gap control, clean up the transition defense. And through that, does Elias Pettersson get two more scoring chances? Like, that's what we're talking about here.
Text comes in. Subway text message inbox. Saturday was an absolutely disgusting game. Travis Green must have told his team they were going to a funeral because they came out as flat as can be. No pushback whatsoever. Green needs to be fired. There's no excuse to lose to Calgary or Minnesota. How many more games is Green going to give away points before he's fired? We'll be out of a playoff spot by Friday. Travis Green and Newell Brown both need to be fired. Mike Commodore in Calgary. I just want people, I don't think this is the majority of the fan base. I literally just wanted to play this drop. Mike Commodore in Calgary recently was informed that there were some people like this texter who are upset with the coaching in Vancouver, despite where they are this season. He had this to say.
Fire the coach. Are you serious? Wake up, Vancouver. Fire the coach.
Massive. Yeah, exactly. I literally just wanted to play that drop. That is the view from elsewhere.
That's funny.
Fire the coach and Travis Green. This question comes in, Bick. Two questions. One, do you think Brock will have to work his way back up the line once he's back if the team is winning? Two, do you think Demko could secretly be injured, which is why Markey's always starting?
We'll start with the Brock one. I guess it depends on the level of success that line mate is having. But if Brock comes back, I would expect him to be with Elias Pettersson and JT Miller
Hundo
on that line. Unless Jake Virdanen goes in there and it's like six goals and four games, whatever it is. We might be setting too high of a bar for Jake. But unless he blows the doors off, I would expect to see Brock Besser when he returns.
As for the Demko, no. I don't see any reason to believe Demko is injured whatsoever. I do wonder when his next start is.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if he would start actually Saturday against Calgary. I know it's a big divisional game,
Friday, yeah.
But yeah, because of the amount Markstrom played on the road trip and it's your first game back from a road trip, I wondered if Demko would play. Obviously, he didn't. Doesn't get the call again tonight. You kind of think that Markstrom's going to start against Chicago on Wednesday, given it's Sedin night, that their jerseys are going to the rafters, a fellow Swede, former teammate. You would think he gets that start, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm fine if Demko starts that game.
I would be stunned.
But I'd be stunned if he did.
Yes.
So does Markstrom get a prolonged stretch and Demko plays perhaps Sunday against Anaheim?
There's so many days off here, though, right? You play on Monday, you play Wednesday, and you don't play till Sunday, and then you don't play till Wednesday, and then you don't play till Saturday, and then you don't play till Tuesday. Like, I think you could go just Markstrom all the way through here.
Oh, you could. Absolutely, you could. But at some point, Demko needs to start a game simply to give Markstrom even more of a breather. And Anaheim makes sense in that regard of, hey, just give him a nice run off. Just let him completely rest and get ready for what is truly going to be the stretch drive through March.
Anaheim, if you're trying to pick spots, okay, so he's definitely playing tonight. We know that. Definitely playing Wednesday just because that's the right thing to do. So Anaheim makes sense.
If he played Wednesday and Demko started Sunday, that's a full week off.
I feel like it's one of those Sunday-Wednesday games.
That's a full week off. Canucks don't have a lot of hockey in the near future. They don't. They just don't play many games. It gets hot and heavy come late February, early March, but not right now.
You probably want to put yourself in the best spot before the deadline, too. Maximize all the information. Hey, say, you know, we maximize our point potential because we started out our number one goalie. And get closer and closer to that date. And, you know, if you have some cushion, it leaves you with some options. It leaves you with, you know, different things you could pursue.
Had a couple of texts come in after playing the Mike Commodore comment. Win three in a row, extend green. Lose three in a row, fire green. There's one. And then the other one comes in. I'm a Flames fan who recently moved here. From my perspective, Travis Green is a superb coach. I would agree with that assessment right there. I promised you some more Sedin conversation as we kick off Sedin week. Henrik Sedin at the podium today. Mentioned this to Marcus Naslund as well. Why have so many Swedes done so well in Vancouver? There is a lengthy lineage. Here's what the former captain had to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, first of all, I think Vancouver and Canada and Sweden are pretty similar in the, like, just the feel of the people and the city itself is, it reminds, I think, a lot of Swedes about Sweden. And so that's one thing. And I think Swedes are fairly loyal people to, or players, when right. When you get drafted and you want to succeed the place where you get drafted, and there's not a lot of Swedes that go ask for trades or want to leave. I think that's one reason as well. And Thomas Green is a big thing now lately, yeah. Where he was the one who found us and Alex Hedler and a lot of other players. So he's another big reason.
A lot of players have told me it was the Swedish players' ability to understand the game, read the game, probably have the skill level, but acclimate quicker than they thought. A lot of players have told me that. Is that something just kind of ingrained in the Swedish hockey culture of being so ingrained in the game and being able to transfer that?
Yeah, I think we all were brought up as team players, team first, and it was never about your own ability to score or win games yourself. It's about the team. So I think when you come over here, it's the same. You have that ingrained in you, and that's you want to help the team and in any way. And I'm sure there's other nationalities are the same, but I think the way we were brought up is you play hockey to be a team player.
Canadian players have said the Swedes are just like us, except for the yelling and screaming. But Danny said, no, we behind closed doors, the Swedes can scream as well as anybody else.
No, for sure. That's no. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. Who's winners and who can win the big games and who plays in what way. But deep down, I think we're just hockey players. It doesn't matter where you come from. You want to win as bad if you're Russian or Canadian or Swedish. It's just the way you go about it.
That's the former captain. Equal time for his brother, who obviously in the specter of this week was asked about what tonight means to him, to have Marcus Naslund coming back. Stan Smeal, a guy who oversaw their career in Vancouver, and of course, Trevor Linden, their former teammate. Here's Daniel Sedin.
We really want him here, and we'll still see him out in the street and talk to him. And like I said, the support he gave us when he came back, to hear those things from a player like him, I think it meant a lot. I mean, you had teammates and they support us huge too our first year, but to have a guy come from the outside and come back and he was just an awesome guy to us. Like I said, the support meant the world.
How much of this week, I mean, obviously the culmination is your jersey's going to the Raptors, but how much of it is the guys that are making an effort to be here for you guys, former teammates?
That's everything to us. We don't like to be in the spotlight. I think we always realized that we would not be the players we were or the people we were without the surrounding cast and the friends we made and the friends we had playing this game. So it should be a celebration about those people. And I think looking back, I think Trevor and Marcus and Stan would say the same things too. I think they had good teammates, leaders on their teams that kind of taught them what it took to be a professional hockey player.
What does it mean when Bergevin said, listen, I know you guys have a game, but you get back to Vancouver. What does it mean? I mean, because you know Burr, he's a coach now, he's in the A. He's focusing on his team, but they wanted to make sure he was here. What does that mean?
Yeah, and I think that we had talked, when we invited him, we talked to him, and he said, I got to make sure that I can leave and come back, and I think that says a lot about him too. He takes everything very serious, and he's a coach now, and he still made sure he would come back, but he had to talk to Montreal first, so it says a lot about him.
Daniel Sedin talking about having Trevor Linden here, the impact that he and Marcus Naslin and many others have had on his career. And it was very Sedin at the press conference this morning with all of the audio I've heard. Obviously, I was doing my show live at the time that they were speaking, Bick, but I've heard lots of the comments and seen lots of the quotes that have been put out there. All about other people.
Yeah.
I know this week's about us, but we're the result of everybody else. Thank you.
You know, it goes back to what we were talking about of role models and building community and, you know, having an appreciation for those that put things forward, you know, push things forward for them in not even just their charitable acts, but think of all the trainers that help them out, right? And the coaches that help them out and the line mates who, you know, aren't going to get as much recognition as, you know, some of the higher profile ones. Like, everyone in their world, they appreciate to some degree.
Well, wasn't it Daniel the last time he was at the All-Star game and he was part of Team Pacific that won the whole thing, took his $100,000 and gave it to the training staff? Like, that just got split up with them? Here you go.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to that. Guaranteed those guys took care of the trainers and everybody else who helped them financially throughout the course of their career. Guaranteed they gave them something. Bonus at the end of the year, month, whatever it happened to be. And to say, well, man, I make a lot of money and you guys could use it and this would make an impact. Here you go. Fantastic stuff.
There's that generosity, right? And, you know, I heard you on the way in with, I think it was with Dan Hamhuis, just talking about how, you know, guys go in different rooms. Or you're talking to teammates that used to play with them. And the difference it makes when the best players are also the best people. For something like that, it's easier to perform when you're in a positive mindset and you have a positive culture in your dressing room. Those guys set the standard for what that is.
Well, and I know this will be seen as a small thing, but it's not. It's not when you're on a team. Every single time the Sedins and the Canucks won big games, they would say, you know what, let the other guys go out and talk. They, you know, Dan Hamhuis was great for us tonight, or Alec, whoever it was. It's positive, going to be positive questions coming in. Let those guys take that. We lost tonight. We got worked. I don't care who made the mistake. We're taking the questions. Mm-hmm. That goes a long way as a teammate, doesn't it?
Well, for sure. It should be the same in a lot of businesses, too. Just think of, I'm just trying to frame it, of someone who clearly makes more, like picks up a check. That, over time, it matters. All the culture setting acts you can do, that stuff matters in the long term, because what does it result? It means people want to give it a little bit more when it's time to perform.
No question about it. You guys get to perform the program later on today, kicking off Sedin Week.
It's,
I know you
great.
Guys have the pregame show coming our way as well, so I imagine we're going to be carrying the press conference from Legends Night down here at Rogers Arena, or at least a portion of it. We'll hear some of that audio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Oh, sounds no, like a good plan, Rintoul.
Of course. And we'll have a couple of former teammates, all that. It's going to be a fun week.
Fantastic stuff. We will throw things back to the studio. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda have Reach Deep for you next. Good 3 hours coming your way. Great night to kick off Sedin Week. Predators in town. We're back tomorrow at 9 a.m. with the Scott Rintoul Show on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.